From the studios of NPR West, I'm Tony Cox. It's Friday, and time again to tickle your funny bone with our featured comic of the week. And today, a rebroadcast of our visit with actress and comedian Aisha Tyler. Aisha got into comedy by way of boredom while acting in her hometown, San Francisco. There, she would routinely sneak into improv comedy sessions. Aisha went on to attend Dartmouth College, and after graduating, worked as an advertising executive. Though corporate America paid the bills, Aisha left to immerse herself in comedy, working clubs and the college circuit. She became known for her razor-sharp wit during a stint as host of E! Entertainment's Talk Soup and the syndicated dating show The Fifth Wheel. At the onset of our discussion, I explained to Aisha why she scared me.
Why are you going to be scared of me?
I'm scared of you because, see, I've seen you on The Fifth Wheel, and, you know, you will crack on a brother.
Can I take it to the street? You can get into that ass every once in a while. You just got to do it. That was my job, was to get into the ass a little bit. But you know, people always talk about people on that show, and they go, oh, you know, Ditta, you made so-and-so look bad. I was like, no, he made him look bad. I just took out a little pen and underlined the bad portions of his night for him, you know.
You know, how is it that people are willing to put themselves on television to look like they do?
I don't know what that is about. People run up to me all the time. They go, oh, I want to be on your show. I'm like, have you seen the show, man? Why don't I just bend you over my knee and spank you right now and just get the embarrassment over with in public, you know? Oh, God.
How did you get into this? Did you really, you know, this story about you ditching school and doing your comedy thing, that's true, huh?
That is true. I finished college and I was working and I was miserable. You know, I was just like doing that corporate thing and I felt, you know, I didn't know what was wrong. I was really unfulfilled and I didn't understand it. And I thought, you know, what can I just do right now that I don't have to pay for, know anybody, audition, have any friends, call my cousin Poopy, you know, like just get in there. Mm-hmm. And comedy was a thing that you could just go do. And we had watched all this comedy on TV and I was like taking these notes and stuff and this little raggedy notebook and none of it was funny. Let me tell you, that thing was like a brick when you dropped it on the ground, one joke in there. And I got up on the stage, it was like 2 o'clock in the morning in this old, like broken down joint called the Holy City Zoo, which is like this 30-seat club, no liquor license, like a bum slept in there every night, you know.
Okay.
You had to pay money. You had to pay $3 for 2 minutes.
Oh, and, you had to pay
you had to
perform.
Pay to get up. You're like,
oh,
please. You're like, please, sir, here are my sweaty $3, you know. Let me on your stage.
Okay.
I got up there, and I don't even know what I talked about. It was just gibberish. And I said, like, maybe one mildly amusing thing, and, like, somebody tittered. I was like, I'm a genius! Richard Pryor who? Eddie Murphy what? That was it.
So where did you develop your comic sense in terms of the material? Obviously, you have a political mind. You were a political science major in college. Mm-hmm. So some of it has to come from there a little bit, I would think.
You know, my comedy is not really political in like the kind of typical sense of the word. I definitely think I'm more in the vein of like a Richard Pryor or Chris Rock where their socio-political commentary is kind of hidden under the comedy. I mean, a lot of people go and watch Chris and they just die laughing and then they leave and they're like, wait a minute. I feel as if I have learned something. There was some kind of Ryan Witty undercurrent when he was talking about the big piece of chicken. Socio-political piece of chicken, you know? So I try to kind of, you know, I talk a lot about, you know, a lot about men and women and kind of sexual politics, but it's very buried just under, like, me just telling stories about stuff that's going on in my life. You know?
You also talk about your childhood, right?
I do talk about my childhood quite a bit. I mean, I was one of the black kids who went to the all-white school.
Okay.
I lived in a black neighborhood, all right? And I went to a white school. So first of all, I would get home every day after school and the kids in my neighborhood would be like, man, you talk like a white girl. And I'd be like, oh my God, I do not. God, you shut up.
This is in San Francisco, right?
Yes. Okay. You know, I was like trying to be hard. I will jack you. I will beat you up. I will knock you in your, I don't really know what the word is, but I'll look it up. Yeah.
You know, I'm looking at you sitting across from me and I'm staring at you because you're the first black person I've ever seen who will be on Friends. That's like amazing. I want to just come over and touch you like a black person's going to be on Friends.
Like this even a white off.
Yeah, right.
Get a little gold. No, you know, actually, Gabrielle Union did the show way back in the day. She did episode.
Okay, that's true. Yeah. All right, one episode out of, what, 1,000?
Yeah, she did.
Okay.
It's big in the sense that it's the biggest, I think it's the biggest, well, there was, Lauren Tom did the show, like episode 2, she had a really long arc, but it's the longest arc for a black actor on the show. It's big. It's 4 seasons this year, and we don't know, but we think I might be going back in the fall for some worse episodes in the fall. So it's a very big arc, and it's good. I mean, I'm happy. I'm proud of it. Absolutely, I'm very proud.
Just
very
like
excited.
Being in high school when you were the only black kid.
You know what? I'm just used to it now. They're like, "How does it feel?" I'm like, "Girl, you don't need." There's one other black dude here. We could start a riot. I'm fine. If I need some help, I know I got the security guard behind me.
Hey, somebody told me to ask you, are you going to be a love interest for one of the guys?
I'm going to be a love interest for two of the guys.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when the brown sugar comes up there, people go nuts. No, I am going to be, everybody falls out. Oh, here she comes. I'm going to be a love interest for both Joey and Ross. I get into a love triangle between the two of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I get to do a little smooching and a little playing. I'm a little player. I come in, I'm a little player on the show.
You like that?
You know, it was fun. I mean, it's like a very juicy storyline. You know, you get on the show and you want it to be a big juicy storyline with lots of stuff for your character to do, and you kind of get to create some drama. And my character gets to come in and create a lot of drama. But she's a professor of paleontology, so she's intelligent. She's witty. She's, you know, funny. She's smart. She gets to come in and kind of be this kind of, in a lot of ways, this perfect girl, and but then, you know, she's got all these fallibilities, and she ends up in this little dramatic situation with these two guys. So it's a great part as an actress. You know, you want to come in and, you know, there's always that struggle that black actors have where we want to come in and play the perfect part, but I want to come in and play the juicy part. I want to have something good to do, and it's a great part. It's very cool.
But what about stand-up? So stand-up is like, okay, I don't need that anymore.
You know, I love doing stand-up. Stand-up, there are two kinds of comedians. There's the comedians who just do it because they think it's going to get them something, and then the comedians who do it because they don't know how to do anything else. And I'm definitely of the second. I mean, I love doing stand-up, and you know, but it's hard. Any comedian will tell you, man, that stuff is just, it's a grueling. You know, you have all your big, you know, now it's nice. I go and everybody knows me. They all came to see me. But I mean, I did those shows where, man, I did this college tour where I drove around the country with a white dude and a Filipino dude in a van. We were driving around the South, man. The Klan was just salivating every time we drove by. It was like a little starter kit, you know? And it was just a struggle. Well, you pull into some towns where you run into your hotel room and lock the door, put a chair underneath, you'd be peeping out through the 2 o'clock in the morning, looking around and see what was going on. You know, in that sense, once you go through that trial by fire, you know, you love it, and you know, you don't want to let it go. So I still go out. You know, I go to Vegas. I do Vegas. I'll do Vegas a couple times a year, which is great, 'cause, you know. That sounds just stupid.
Well, you know, I can't afford to go to the shows in Vegas, so would you just drop a couple of things on me because it's free? We got you here now, please.
Should I throw some stuff at you? Next time, I will call you up. I will definitely call you up.
Well, no, I don't mean tickets. I want to hear one of your
stuff. Oh, one of my bits?
Yeah, I want to hear a bit.
Oh, man. Let's see if I have a bit that I can do on the radio. let's see. Let me think of something incendiary. Well, I talk a lot in my act about being married. And I married my college sweetheart, and he's white. I married a white guy. I had to because my credit was jacked up. Let me tell you what. I needed a truck, man. You know, they were giving me all this trouble at the dealership, you know, about the credit ratings and my income and the stabbings. And finally, I was like, man, I'm going to come back with a white boy. All right, I'll be right back. You are approved, ma'am. But the cool thing about being married to a white guy is that you know, he's very handy, you know? Like, I never leave home without him, you know? Because, okay. Like, on the weekends, I'm like, I'm not getting pulled over tonight. I got me a white boy. And the cop stopped me. He's like, ma'am, do you know how fast you were going? Oh, I can see you've got a white boy. My apologies. Move along. My husband and I were raised really differently, too. Like, I was spanked when I was a kid, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all got tanned. And then he wasn't, and he's really against it. And he's always like, you know, you don't need violence, discipline your child, you know. There's other ways besides spanking. Because, you know, white people just love a timeout. He's trying to time me out.
From the studios of NPR West, I talked with the wonderful and the talented and very funny Miss Aisha Tyler. To listen to this show or past shows or for NPR or for transcripts, call 877-NPR-TEXT. This is a news and opinion program created by NPR and the African American Public Radio Consortium. The show is produced by Cheryl Flowers, edited by Philip Martin, and directed by Sarah Spivak. Our technical director is Theo Mondel. Carlos Asensio is the engineer. Our production staff includes Toya Baker, Angie Hamilton Lowe, Vincent Shaw, Roy Hurst, Corey Moore, Kyle McKinnon, Devin Robbins, Therese Sims, Nathan Thompson, Corey Turner, and Tashima Walker. And the manager of NPR West is Cindy Kennard. Our theme music was composed by George Duke. I'm Tony Cox. This is NPR News. Have a great weekend.